psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, the voice you trust for the family you love.
I gotta be honest, I am even more happy that Lincoln is a boy.
Just where do you suppose my strong will came from?
Not from me.
Ryan was not a strong-willed child. He was sneaky. Oh. You had to keep your eye on him at all times.
Me?
This is Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson, along with Ryan Dobson and Luann Crane.
Hello, everybody. I'm Ryan Dobson, and we are here today in the studio of KGFT in Colorado Springs, which is our local Salem station. We appreciate their flexibility in allowing us to do this. We have changed our topic for today because of an urgent issue that has just come up, and we are going to get right to it. Dad, I don't want to be the sky is falling, but I'm upset. Explain why we are here today.
Well, I will do that, Ryan, and I have to admit that there's something going on inside of me, too. We come to our listeners today with very, very heavy hearts and with great concern over what has just happened, having to do with a federal judge in San Francisco, Vaughn Walker, who the New York Times indicates very well may be homosexual, has overturned Proposition 8 in California, which defined marriage as being exclusively between a man and a woman. That was a state constitutional amendment. It was passed by the majority of the voters. Tremendous effort went into that. Tremendous amount of money. People sacrificed to get the word out and to get people to the polls. Mm-hmm. And we won the election. Marriage was defined as being between one man and one woman. And yet this judge had the temerity to throw 2,000 years of Western civilization on the trash heap of history. And it has overridden the people of California. I say this often. I will continue to do so year after year because it's a foundational observation. President Abraham Lincoln said at Gettysburg that this is a government of the people, by the people, and
right.
for the people.
Right.
It's the people that determine the direction we will go. And the people are losing it. And now they have been overturned again. And yes, I am irritated by that. I am concerned about it because of the implications that it has for future generations, for families everywhere, and yet this judge has taken it upon himself to determine the direction we will go.
Can you imagine all the people that struggled, sacrificed, pled their case for this vote, won the vote, one person overturns it? How angry would you be? You're a former Californian. I was born and raised in California. How upset would you be if your vote was turned over that way?
And I'll tell you, many, many people fasted and prayed about this, some of them for 40 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of Dr. Jim Garlow in San Diego, Skyline Wesleyan Church, who led that fight. His life was threatened. His family was threatened. And he put it on the line over this issue. And now this judge overturns it. I am irritated.
He worked
about
within
it.
The democratic process, as we are supposed to do, affected that outcome. People voted. They voted that marriage is between one man and one woman, and yet one person can overturn it.
Well, we have a very distinguished panel that we want to talk to on the phone today, and they are very familiar. At least two of the names are certainly known to our listeners, and we've worked with them for many years. And the third is a man that I respect very highly. Now, these men are highly intelligent, and they approach an issue like this from a legal perspective and a more analytical point of view than Ryan, you and I just expressed. I don't mind telling you that in layman's terms, I am ticked over this.
Mm-hmm, me too.
And will be for a long time until we get it overturned. But let me introduce the people that we're going to hear from. Professor Robert George is the McCormick Professor of Jurisprudence at Princeton University, where he's taught since 1985. Now, he has advanced degrees from both Oxford University and Harvard University, and he is an authority on constitutional law and the philosophy of the law. Chuck Colson, of course, is the founder of Prison Fellowship Ministries and at one time served as a special counsel for President Richard Nixon. He has authored numerous best-selling books defending and explaining the Christian faith. And the third guest on the line with us today that I was just talking about is Professor Timothy George. He's joining us for the first time, but he has been the dean of Beeson Divinity School since 1988, and he teaches church history and doctrine. He is also the executive editor of Christianity Today. He's an ordained minister, and he's written more than 20 books. With that, gentlemen, I appreciate your joining us today. Let's go right to the heart of it. What is your reaction to what this unelected, unaccountable judge did to the institution of marriage just 2 days ago? Chuck, I'm going to ask you to respond first.
Well, Jim, this is a great opportunity for the three of us, Timothy George, Robbie George, and I, to come together with you for this broadcast because we are the ones who authored and introduced the Manhattan Declaration, manhattandeclaration.org, in which we made a very spirited defense, and I'm sure many of our listeners, and you, of course, have signed it, but we made a spirited defense of the sanctity of life, the sanctity of the institution of marriage itself, and religious liberty. And all three are assaulted brutally by this decision. I think Robbie George has given the best legal analysis of this I've read, so I'm going to hold that for just a minute and let him speak to that. He can speak to it much better than I can. This is the kind of thing we've been warning about for years and years. This is a very precise thing we worried about and warned about. But let me say this. The gay rights movement has thus far avoided the federal courts, and I think they've done so for a reason. And I think this could turn around and be a great opportunity for us, because every one of the cases, starting with Roe versus Wade and the prayer and school decisions before that, there was a popular consensus behind the change that the Supreme Court made. This is the first one to come along since 1997 where there isn't a moral consensus in support of it. And I believe, and Robbie, I think, believes, and I haven't heard from Timothy, but I think he will share this, that the Supreme Court has not ever handed down a decision which flew into the face and teeth of a strong moral consensus against it. They didn't do it in 1997, and this is where our opportunity comes from. In 1997, the assisted suicide case came from the state of Washington. It went right through the Ninth Circuit, just like this decision will, and it used Roe versus Wade and all of the Casey versus Planned Parenthood, all of the language of these prior decisions which the Supreme Court had upheld, which had come from the Supreme Court, in defense of making physician-assisted suicide a legal constitutional right. And the Supreme Court, a lot of people expected the Supreme Court would do this, would make it a right. They did not. They refused to do so. 9-0, they turned down the appeal. Why? Listen to what Chief Justice Rehnquist said at the time. Throughout the nation, Americans are engaged in an earnest and profound debate about the morality, legality, and practicality of physician-assisted suicide. Our holding, that is dismissing the appeal, permits this debate to continue as it should in a democratic society. I don't think if we build a real groundswell of opinion now over the next several months that the Supreme Court will rule and supporting what happened in California 2 days ago. I don't believe it. I believe that this is an opportunity we have to build a groundswell of support that will cause the Supreme Court not to legalize gay marriage.
Well, Chuck, let me ask a question from a layman. I have no knowledge of the law particularly, and certainly no expertise. But let me ask the question. Whereas the Supreme Court has been unwilling to rule against the majority, the moral majority of the American people, is it not true that lower courts have been willing to do that? And I'm speaking of the Defense of Marriage Act, which was declared unconstitutional by a judge in Massachusetts and by a judge in Wisconsin who declared the National Day of Prayer unconstitutional. We know both of those things are supported by the American people. So where's the disconnect here?
Well, the disconnect, Jim, is simply this, that the lower courts have been doing that. That's exactly what this judge did 2 days ago in California. Judge Walker went against the will of the people, which had been clearly expressed. 52% voted for Proposition 8 in the midst of a campaign in which it was a huge turnout of voters, and particularly African-American voters. So it's a very significant expression of the Democratic will in California, and he went against it. I'm simply saying that when these cases get to the Supreme Court, they are very unwilling to use the authority of the court to try to suppress an ongoing public debate.
I think they
learned something in Roe versus Wade. When you do that, the issue doesn't go away. You just create a culture war. Uh-huh. And there would be, as Robbie put it in the piece I read this morning by Robbie George, that this, if this decision were to stand, you'd have a continuation of the culture war more severe than after Roe versus Wade. So yeah. I think the Supreme Court is going to take a totally different position. I think it's a golden opportunity for us to mobilize public opinion, kick back, and I think if we got a victory in the Supreme Court, it would put an end to a lot of this nonsense.
Professor Robert George, would you react to what Chuck has just said?
Well, Jim, Chuck Colson's right. The modern Supreme Court has tended to stay its hand and not usurp the authority of the people. In cases where the justices believed that they could not bring public opinion along with them, where they believed that the decision would be held by a very large segment of the public to be illegitimate. Now, sometimes they've guessed incorrectly. They thought in 1973, in handing down Roe versus Wade, that the American people were prepared to accept the abortion license that was created in that case. They turned out to be wrong about that. The American people have not accepted abortion, which is why the issue continues to be potent even to this day. But where they believe that the American people are unprepared to accept a decision as legitimate, because the American people believe it lacks any basis in the text or structure or original understanding of the Constitution, the courts have tended to leave the issue where it belongs, which is in the democratic process. Now, lower court judges have not followed that that rule nearly as much. You have lower court judges who've been willing to hand down really quite outrageous decisions, like the one that was handed down by Judge Walker overturning California Proposition 8, and simply redefining marriage in defiance of the will of the people. My own view, Jim, is the problem was not that Judge Walker experiences same-sex attraction or regards himself as homosexual or gay. The problem is that he let his own political and moral views influence his reading of the Constitution. In fact, he simply laid the Constitution aside and substituted his own personal political and moral judgment. So he usurped the authority of the people, and therefore, I think we have to judge, behaved unconstitutionally. So what we have here is an unconstitutional, indeed anti-constitutional decision of a lower court judge, and we have to hope that the Supreme Court of the United States, when the issue reaches them, will reverse the judge's holding. Chuck Colson's right. It might very well depend on whether we make clear to the justices that the redefinition of marriage, the destruction of the historic understanding of marriage as the union of man and woman, simply will not be accepted by us, we the people, as legitimate.
Mm. Professor Timothy George, weigh in here from a biblical perspective.
Yeah, I'm a theologian. I'm not a lawyer. I'll defer to my good friends, Robbie George and Chuck Colson, both of whom have great legal minds, to talk about the legal and the political dimensions of this. But I think, as a Christian, as a theologian, this is the beginning of a turning point. There are two words in the Greek New Testament that are related one to another. Crisis, we get our English word crisis, it means turning point. And the other word is kairos, it's opportunity. This is something significant has really happened in the last few days in our country, and we are facing a crisis that could become an opportunity for God's people. I don't know how this will turn out, but I think this is a test of Christian faithfulness. And we have called upon our fellow believers in the Manhattan Declaration, Catholics, Orthodox, and evangelical believers all across the spectrum, to come together, to stand together, and to speak out together on behalf of the sanctity of life, the dignity of marriage, and religious freedom for all people. I think we'll look back upon this as the beginning of that process that we will all remember. And what we're doing today on this conversation and in this moment will have great implications for the future.
You know, I appreciate the hope that you all are providing and the positive interpretation of this, but it depends on the American people stepping up, and certainly those with strong Christian views, and letting their voices be heard. And I'm not sure I think people are ready to do that. I haven't seen any evidence. And in fact, Chuck, when you and Robbie were on this program last, which was 2 or 3 weeks ago, you were talking about the fact that if people don't defend religious liberty right now, it's going to be gone. There's a little hand wringing in that, and my hands are still sweaty about it.
Timothy George's very powerful remark here, I think, really needs to be taken seriously. Christians have to recognize that the logic of Judge Walker's opinion not only undermines the institution of marriage, but it also jeopardizes our religious liberty. Under the logic of the Walker opinion in this case, the fact that someone holds a view on the basis of his religious faith essentially disqualifies that view as providing a legitimate basis for public policy. So if your vote as an American is in part shaped by your faith, perhaps your faith in the equality of all human beings and in civil rights and so forth, under Judge Walker's reasoning, that vote is illegitimate, and legislation that is put into place in part as a result of that vote can be invalidated. So our participation as full and equal citizens in the American political process, our religious liberty, is very much in jeopardy as a result of the logic of this opinion. So people who think that this doesn't matter to them, Christians who think that this decision poses no threat to them, had better rethink that very fast and very hard.
Let me just say this. This is a critical moment for the Christian church. I've despaired sometimes at what I see as the indifference and some of the people with lame excuses for not signing the Manhattan Declaration. And you see them unwilling to stand up on some of these tough issues. Well, this is our test. If we stand up on this, we can bring Christian influence and wholesomeness to bear and for the common good. Marriage is for the common good. It's not necessarily because we're Christians that we believe in this. We believe in it because it's the way in which you create a just, rightly ordered society. So I want to say to my brethren who are listening all across the country, the Christian people now are going to be put to the test. Do we really want to fight for what we say we believe in? Or are we simply going to sit there and pander to people and tickle their ears? I think it's high time we got busy and did what we say we believe. And so let's see people of courage step forth. I can't tell you, Jim, the number of people who have said to me, I wish I'd signed the Manhattan Declaration, but I'd lose too many members of my church. I don't care if you lose members of your church. Stand up for truth. Let's have the guts to do what is right.
Mm-hmm. This ruling by Judge Walker, I think, has to do far more with than just a question of the case in California. It really gets to the heart of who we are as human beings, what kind of life we want to live, and what kind of families we want to have. Marriage is defined, according to this ruling, as basically a kind of personal, selfish whim. But in the religious traditions represented by Judaism, Christianity, and even Islam, marriage is more than that. Marriage is in service to the human community, and it is related to the children we are meant to bear and bring up in nurture and love. And so this is what is at stake. It's not just a question of politics in California or somewhere else. It's a matter of what kind of human being do we want to be? How are we going to be faithful to what God has created us to be?
Well, the Manhattan Declaration has it exactly right. We live at a time of great danger, but it's also a time of great opportunity. When it comes to marriage, Judge Walker's decision, outrageous as it is a reminder that the very foundation of society is now in jeopardy. There are people who would simply define it away. People are exercising political power. And with it would go religious liberty. And it falls to us to stand out and speak up and defend them. The founders of our country pledged their very lives as well as their fortunes and their sacred honor. None of us are going to be martyred. None of us are going to be killed. But that's hardly anything when compared to what our founders were willing to suffer, and in the Christian tradition, what so many martyrs through the whole history of Christianity have been willing to suffer. But what is demanded of us, we must do. We must stand up. We must speak out.
Well, let me just say this. When I listen to Timothy and Robbie speak, I'm really proud to be associated with them in the Manhattan Declaration. But this is a very, very articulate and important expression, not only of Christian truth, it's Christocentric in every respect, but also of what's good for society. I've worked in the prisons all these years. I know exactly what happens when the family breaks down. The kids end up in the gangs, and then they end up with our ministering to them in prison. The chief cause of crime is the breakdown of the family. And Professors Wilson and Herrnstein at Harvard said the lack of moral training during the morally formative years. So we're not pleading a special interest cause here. We are pleading for what is the common good of society and justice. And I think we have to make an appeal to our secular neighbors. And I really believe if we present this case well, Jim, believe me, if we present it well, and if we speak to the common good and we speak to what's just and right in the society, if we do that, we're going to get a lot of people joining us. And we're going to see those polls continue to show what they have been showing consistently, and that is that the American people do not want marriage to be anything other than a man and a woman. And when this case gets to the Supreme Court, if we have built a groundswell, we're going to win this case. And I think what happened in Missouri this week is a great example. There are two-thirds of the people who voted came out and voted against the medical care plan. People are very angry. They're ready to stand up and be counted and have the courage of their convictions. Now let's see the church do the same thing.
Dr. Dobson, I just want to make a point about the importance of Christian people coming together to pray. I know you have believed in prayer and encouraged that across the years of your ministry.
Absolutely.
And it's so important at this moment when we must be engaged. This is not a political issue, but we must be engaged in the political process. But that is not the end all of this appeal. Only God in heaven can deliver us from the condition in which we find ourselves. And this is a time for believing Christians to come together, to stand together, and to pray together for revival, for awakening, and for deliverance.
Well, it all comes down to that. So many times we do radio programs on these urgent matters of concern, and it really is going to be determined, the outcome will be determined by the response of the American people and about from our listeners and from those that take the Bible seriously. And we're right there again. It seems to me like it's hanging in the balance. Is that the way you see it?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, Jim, at the end of broadcasts that I've done with you over the years, you've always said to the listeners, go call your congressman, go write a letter to the editor, do this. Well, this time it's right on us. Anybody listening to this program right now is being challenged to take a stand and to be heard, because this judgment is up to the American people now. This judgment is up to the church, and we've got to take responsibility. There's nobody else we can pick up a phone and call. We've got to do it ourselves.
Jim, let me speak to every listener. Number one, please pray. Yeah. Number two, please go to the Manhattan Declaration website, read the Manhattan Declaration, and sign the Manhattan Declaration if you haven't already done so. Number three, please speak to your pastors and others in your churches. Please ask your pastor to preach on the great subject of marriage and on the threat that we're experiencing to marriage. Number four, please write a letter to the editor of your local newspaper. Make your voice heard. Number five, write to your congressman. Write to your senator. Let them know that you strongly stand for the institution of marriage as the union of husband and wife. Everybody has to pitch into this battle. Everybody's voice is important.
Mm.
Dr. Dobson, across the years of the history of God's people, it's been in times of deep darkness that a light has burst forth. I think we're living in dark times today, but I'm not despairing, because we believe in the God of hope. We're called to action. This is the moment to stand up, to speak up, and to look up.
Mm. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate your giving the time to this issue today. The ruling came down just 2 days ago, and so there's going to be a lot of talk over the weekend about it. I do hope that our listeners will weigh in on those discussions, whether you write the local newspaper, call a talk show, do something to let your voices be heard. And again, gentlemen, we're going to be in touch with you about this because this is just round one or round 500, and we will be continuing to want to get your views on it. Thanks again for being with us.
Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you, Jim.
Again, we so appreciate these gentlemen coming on such short notice by phone to discuss this important issue. We would love for you to get a copy and sign the Manhattan Declaration. You can find that at our website, which is myfamilytalk.com. If you'd like a copy of it sent to you, we'd love to do that as well. Our number is 877-732-6825. Again, it's 877-732-6825, or you can write for one at P.O. Box 51010, Colorado Springs, Colorado 80949. God bless you, and God bless our country.